Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You guys, do you guys ski or snowboard?
Nope.
No.
I've never been.
I fell down a mountain in front of Ryan's whole family in skis one time, and that was probably the last time.
A whole mountain?
Pretty much, yes. I mean, it was several falls.
Mm-hmm. I'm just picturing you end over end
with
on your
long,
skis.
Long breaks in between for me to try and get my ski back on.
I'm just imagining
so that I could fall 15 feet later.
I'm just imagining like a long, long fall, and you get up, you're like, all right, I think that's exactly what it was.
Yeah. Like a hot rod.
Mountain sky. Just head over skis. Yeah. Wait. All right. Okay.
Sure.
I think I got it. Sean, are you okay, buddy? I think I'm all right. Just give me one second. Back down the mountain. Like Michael in the bathroom stall. Just a lot of slushing. Tell Ryan to bring toilet paper.
Everyone I know who skis is dead.
There it is.
Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim Dwight Creed, or Andy and Kelly. For your business paper needs, or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and vice president of special projects, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin James, owner-operator of a Jamaican restaurant.
And with us, as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
You probably all think I'm this patrician goddess, but here's the truth. I was born in the little working-class town of Basildon, and until the age of 32, I talked like this, which was bloody horrendous, isn't it?
Every week we get together to talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. This week, The Florida Arc. That's right. We're going to be discussing the 5 to 6 episodes that are The Florida Arc. Season 8, episodes 14 through 18. You got Special Projects, Tallahassee, After Hours, Test the Store, Last Day in Florida, and sort of an epilogue at the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
Get the girl.
Little hangnail. Get the girl.
Yeah, as we were looking at this arc, it stands out to me as one of the more unique sort of series of episodes in the whole of The Office, right? Mm-hmm. We get the characters leaving Scranton, going to Florida. They're in a retail environment. Everything is kind of turned on its head. And we get to see the characters in different situations. This is an especially important arc for Dwight and his character, and he's kind of unleashed to kind of create and carry out this special project. So I'm really excited to talk about that.
Really important arc for Kathy, too.
Yes.
<yeah. laughs> Her
super,
most
super
important arc.
Crucial arc for Kathy.
I would say. And
Aaron. Yeah,
also Aaron.
I was
going to
say, Aaron, Nellie, and Dwight. Those are the big three. Anyway, continue.
Well, just as a recap of the Florida arc, we start in Special Projects where Dwight has now been sort of promoted. He's going to go down to Tallahassee with a team from Scranton and help launch a new store that's run by Nellie Bertram, who we met at the end of season 7.
In search committee. There's an element in this where Dwight gets pulled in and Andy has something he wants to tell him. And Dwight says, if you promote me to head of sales again, I'll be really upset. And basically, you know, you see a lot of that from Dwight at the beginning of this season about him not getting the manager job. You know, Andy consistently calling him his number two. You're the deuce I never want to drop, right? Dwight, my number two, you know, my enforcer, right?
Yeah.
And but he doesn't really give Dwight that much else to do. So in this moment to see Dwight get a little bit of extra responsibility and the opportunity to prove himself a bit more to the corporate figures, you would see him, you know, perform those martial arts moves. Yes.
The best office gift.
That's a really good gift.
Yeah.
The gift that keeps on giving. But yeah, and then after that, we get to see him select his team, which I think is super funny and interesting.
Very funny.
I was thinking about this because I don't think this Florida arc works in any other season, mainly because Michael's not there. I wonder if Michael gets the call from corporate of saying, hey, you need to have put Dwight in charge of a team. Like, it would be a Michael, like, why didn't they ask me to do this?
Yeah.
I would be better. I'm this bachelor. I should go to Florida and live this life. And it wouldn't have worked. But Andy's just like, corporate says this. You're in charge now, you know, and he just like passes it on through.
I don't think
Michael would have done that.
And I want to bring up Andy at this point, too, because I think he's having a pretty good season so far at this juncture in season eight. He's been a good manager. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
We'll see
where we're left at the end of this Florida arc. But
I do really love in seasons 8 and 9. I think there are a lot of moments that are more comedically broad. And you see the show kind of experimenting with different sorts of styles of jokes. And part of that is the editing and the way the scenes are cut together. But I really love this sort of montage with Dwight kind of voicing over, where it kind of pans to him with walking around with a clipboard and looking at different members of the office.
That's great.
My first task is special project manager Dwight Schrute, assembling a crack team. I need people who are loyal. People who help me get an inroad with the gay Hispanic community. He goes to Oscar. People who won't be missed. It's Toby. We don't need idiots, good for nothings, meth heads, or what's your name? Kathy. Kathy.
I do love. It's like a call and response with his voiceover. It's very. I can't come up with the word, but
And then there's this back and forth trying to figure out who's on the team. Jim gets the text from Robert California, kind of hinting.
Oh, I had to step away to grab my notes for a sec, and I heard you do that. I had to rush back without making noise and hit the button. So sorry, that should have come right when you were stuttering.
It feels very out of the documentary almost, which we start to see them get a little bit more creative with that in season 8, but
there are also a couple jokes in this arc, and we'll talk about them, when a character is about to say something kind of offensive and they cut away as they're doing it, or they interrupt them. Todd Packer has one and Dwight has one as well.
Definitely.
A lot of inappropriate things happening actually throughout this whole arc. But this is as far as just getting splitting up the office, and one of them goes on a field trip and the other half stays back at the office. Really weird for the show. I mean, there's nothing that really, I guess when Toby stays home at beach games, but otherwise nothing like this has really happened. Or I guess, there's single episode times where this happens. One group goes for lunch, or, Robert California takes the winners out to his lunch, and that sort of splits the office in half. But that's just one episode.
Right.
And this is this extended thing, and we start to see characters doing things we've never seen. I mean, obviously Andy comes to mind. Andy's doing a lot back at the office because there's this kind of vacuum. Even Kelly's sitting in Dwight's chair back at the office.
She moves into the bullpen.
Kind of introduces this whole element, and she's much more involved in just them talking. So opens up all these little roads for different characters to go down, and we see them doing new stuff. I mean,
and just as a reminder too, we've got going down to Florida. We have Dwight, Jim, Stanley, of course.
Stanley. Kathy, he's a different man.
Florida Stanley. Kathy, Ryan, and Aaron. That's it. And then we've also got when they get down there, of course, Todd Packer's down there and Nelly.
Yeah, I think one thing that we have in season 8, I've talked about this, but in season 7, I feel like the ensemble of characters is very much baked, right? So we got the addition of Gabe, the addition of Aaron, right? With Michael sitting up top. And once Michael leaves and Andy becomes manager, the ensemble is still there, but the power dynamic is kind of thrown off.
Mm-hmm.
When they have the exchanges, when Michael is standing out in the bullpen, and he's talking to everyone all at once, right? There seems to be almost this level of respect, or people are jumping in quite a bit, but it feels like when Andy is manager, he doesn't necessarily command that same thing. People speak up a little more freely. The tone just feels a little bit different. And I think by splitting up the cast in half, basically, you get unique or different sort of exchanges between Andy and Angela and Pam and Kevin. It just has a different feel and a different timbre.
Yeah, you know? Or think about Toby teaches, I can't believe you remember that. Self-defense class. Yeah. He teaches self-defense class, which if he started doing that, Dwight would completely bulldoze him and start hitting people.
Or Michael now is gone too.
Exactly.
You know, so it's kind of allowing him to do that.
Oh, hey, people will actually sit and listen to Toby do something for once.
I also noticed that Toby wearing glasses makes him seem a lot softer. In the
office. He's also like
he adopts it. Yeah, and his mannerisms
slimmed down in this season. Yeah. He's much scrawnier for sure.
When the Andy and Dwight challenge everyone to come up with the case of why they should go to Florida in the next 30 minutes, and when they're talking to Toby, they say, "Wow, it really seems that seasonal affective disorder, aka SAD, is a real thing. It's almost as if everyone is not experiencing the same winter." And Toby's like, "Yes, thank you." Like,
thank you for saying that. Yeah. It's very earnest. Yeah. I mean, another example we get them fighting. We get Daryl and Toby fighting over Kevin's affection for cookies.
That's one of my favorite parts of this.
And I bet Michael Scott was a massive, massive Girl Scout cookie consumer.
I could see that. I could definitely see that. He loves his sugar.
Yeah, and he likes kids. It's a whole package for him. So, you know, it's just these little moments that we haven't really seen. And it's kind of exploring chemistry with different characters in a lot of ways.
You know what? No wonder Toby hasn't been selling his Girl Scout cookies in the office this whole time. Michael would have shut that down.
Oh, you're right. He would have.
Something that that kind of stood out to me is now that we've talked about it on the show, it stands out to me so much when a character swears and they bleep it out.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I've been experiencing this too.
Yeah.
Like, which one are you thinking of?
So basically when Andy and Dwight are deliberating and they come out of Andy's office and Andy says, "Here is your team." And he says, "Kathy, what? Stanley, no, Ryan." And she just goes, "Fuck." Right. Yeah. I actually think he swears when he says Aaron, not Ryan. Yeah. But anyway, it's when he's listing off the team.
Yeah, yeah, right? They just bleep it.
Right, they just bleep it. Yeah.
And then he's like, you know, so happy to have you guys on the team.
It happens again when they're launching the store and Ryan's talking about how great his presentation is going to be.
Right.
Yeah.
And when Andy is the receptionist,
right,
he says, "Hey, Daryl, your fax came through." And he goes, "Oh, yeah."
Got bacon wrap dates on deck.
Oh, yeah. I figured we'd keep things savory while Oscar's mouth is in canker country.
But for all that struggle throughout this episode to pick the team and for, you know, Dwight to, you know, have his emotional roller coaster of getting the promotion and then getting the team that he doesn't want. There's a very special moment at the end of the episode where Jim is like, you know, "Is this a good time for you to tell us what you expect from us?" to Dwight in their little conference room.
I think there are two things that happen. So obviously he brings them all in to share the Florida facts, right? And he has all these different things listed out about what's going on in Florida and different pictures in the back of like Casey Anthony and, you know, everything in Florida. Right?
300 mosquitoes.
Yeah, exactly.
He unleashes the mosquitoes.
And he's trying to, you know, scare everyone away and have them ring the buzzer from Taboo to opt out of the trip, right?
One of the funnier moments when Jim bops him on the nose and he does a little buzz on his own. Really funny. Okay.
And then, but at the end, when they come back in and Dwight has kind of resigned himself, like, "All right, this is my team," right? They start talking about ideas. And I think Aaron suggests the idea like a coat check, right? Where you can check your computers and your printers.
Right.
And he's struck by that's a good idea. And he writes it down on the board. And then to your point, Jim says, "Dwight, would now be a good idea to go over your expectations for us." So in that moment, this team that this team that Dwight has kind of turned his back on and has kind of resigned himself that they aren't going to be any good, they give him good ideas and they give him respect, which I think are the two things that kind of validate Dwight and kind of fire him up going into this special project.
Dwight's kind of the way he almost fetishizes leadership and authority is he Rainn Wilson does such a good job of embodying all that, like seasons pent up of wanting power, and then just given this special project, like, is it really a promotion, by the way? I mean, not yet.
It becomes one, but
he's sort of just like in charge of a project.
Yeah.
I wonder, though, if it isn't meant to kind of be a promotion of some sort, right?
To see what he can do. And,
I guess, on one hand, it's kind of counterintuitive where Robert seemingly picks him, right? Or empowers Andy to pick him. But then at the end, he kind of tanks the project, right?
Right.
So I wonder if this isn't somewhat of a trial for Dwight. You know, to see how Dwight will do, right? Yeah. Even though eventually Robert, or maybe Robert just changes his mind because we know that that's kind of how Robert
yeah,
is.
Yeah.
If he gets into, you know, Spanish Reds and Colombian Whites, right?
He might close right. Which branch does he close? Buffalo.
Buffalo. Yeah. That's right. In Vino Veritas, as they say. Not going to stop trusting my drunk self now.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, yeah, Robert California is the ultimate marionette for The Office.
There is something that I noticed, especially in this season and in this arc. This arc in this moment feels especially silly and ridiculous to me, in that anything can kind of happen, right?
Oh, totally.
They're going to Florida. They're selling printers. They're selling these triangular tablets and stuff. It seems really strange, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think in the early seasons or throughout the large majority of The Office, Dwight's sort of commitment to how seriously he takes everything, right, kind of grounds the show.
Yeah.
And in this mundane, very, very stagnant, sterile environment, right, Dwight is so committed to things that are truly ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
Like Lord of the Rings yeah. and, you know, seeing a werewolf that he shoots and then it turns back into his neighbor's dog. Or him and Moe's trying to reanimate a bull, right? There's this air of kind of ridiculousness. But as the world around Dwight becomes more malleable and more open to strange things, right, Dwight's whole character seems to influence that. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's that tension between like a very stable environment and Dwight being ridiculous changes to now they're both a ridiculous environment and a ridiculous character.
That's a great point that you bring up, and I guess I'll kind of jump episodes here.
Yeah, I think we should move forward at least.
Sure.
One episode.
Yeah. No. We'll skip around.
Well, I think we should go somewhat in order.
Yeah.
Well, I was gonna say something.
Well, bro, I wanted to. Well, I was just gonna wrap up the end of this episode.
All right.
And then we're gonna move on.
Wrap it up.
Okay.
Fine.
No, I was gonna
whatever.
The only thing I was gonna say is the other thing that happens at the end of Special Project is Erin plays her hand that she's going to be staying in Florida, that she's not coming back.
Yeah.
Which sets up a lot of plot for this whole arc. And after Special Project, that brings us to Tallahassee.
Yeah, she has that moment with Andy at the beginning where they're pen twins, right?
Yeah.
She talks about how she sees Andy carpool with Jessica every day, and she's clearly in a lot of pain, right? Seeing Andy basically happy in this relationship. And so I think there is a lot to that, that Erin is kind of looking for a way out, right? You think about Jim going to Stanford, right? It feels very similar, right? And this comes after Christmas wishes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where Jessica comes to the Christmas party and Erin kind of embarrasses herself or gets too drunk and kind of makes a scene, right?
Yeah.
Another
like relationship arc that I don't entirely enjoy, just because it's like, Andy's so unlike himself in his relationship with Jessica.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's like a totally normal guy, and
he's so likable and regular.
Erin like
and,
she's a weirdo. Right, and
yeah,
like, yeah. It's like it feels sudden. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. I think
like,
I think
he's still like the same old like wacko at the start of season 8.
I'm smiling kind of to myself because I think the Andy and Erin relationship dynamic works best when they're both weirdos.
Exactly.
And when one of them is a little more normal, it kind of shuts down. So in season 8, Andy is much more normal. He's in this sort of functional relationship, and Erin seems to be the one acting strangely. And then in season 9, Andy kind of goes off the deep end, right? Or goes out into the ocean.
Sure.
And Erin seems to be the more stable one.
I mean, when Erin says, like, I'm going to Florida and I'm not coming back.
Yeah.
Did anyone go, like, did you?
I don't remember.
No, you didn't care. that's what I think.
I did, but to be fair, I do that when I watch most sitcom episodes. Yeah. I'm known to faint a lot, sitting at home on my couch, watching comedy.
I've come over to Edwin. He's just been weeping.
No, I never.
I'll be right there. It's a good point, though. You know, I mean, it's just tough because Erin's only, she only shows up near, you know, in like season 5.
Yeah,
it's not like she's been there. She's only been there 2 full seasons before this.
True.
But I mean, I was always rooting for her and Andy.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
same.
Yeah.
It's weird because they did seem like a perfect couple,
right?
And then they just slowly untangled it and made it so they would not be a good couple.
As a lot of the emotional kind of heart of the show and the tension between Jim and Pam seems to kind of resolve or kind of move by the wayside in season 8, right? There isn't nearly as much of that sort of tension between the two, between Jim and Pam.
And thank God they brought it back in season 9.
It seems to kind of transfer to Erin and Andy with without the same results.
Yeah. Well, season 8, episode 15, Tallahassee. Now we're here. We're Florida.
Dwight, we're in the Sunshine State.
One of the great cold opens.
Yes,
in
yes, of course.
The history of the show.
I believe you took it.
I drafted because it's one of my all-time favorites.
It must be why you won the draft.
My that pick got snaked for me. That was coming up next when it got to me. But
I'm going
to
read the quote. I'll give you the quote again.
Please do.
Today is the first day of Sabre's new project to develop a chain of retail stores. I am meeting my new boss, Nellie Bertram, head of special projects. Work starts at 9. Sabre HQ is 30 minutes away, driving the speed limit. Giving everyone 20 minutes to shower, plus 50 for Jim to style his hair, 20 for breakfast, 40 for Aaron to get lost between a room and the lobby, 90 for Ryan to do his morning ecstasy. We're already 20 minutes late. but in rewatching the episode, I just noticed some of the like Dwight is giving that quote and he's preparing himself in the morning. He puts on his shoes. Right, another moment where we get to see Dwight's socks. He pulls out like a hanger and it has five of the same ties that are already tied.
Yes, I noticed that too this time.
Right,
yeah.
The exact same ties.
No,
he takes a duffel bag and he stuffs it into his hotel room safe, and then he vacuums the room.
And then he wants two safes.
That's the other thing. Yeah,
oh my God.
Yeah. He's vacuuming the room.
He wakes up and vacuums.
And then the clock behind him, I think, says 5:10 a.m.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So it's crazy how early he gets. Right. But just little things like
he's
Stanley.
Excited.
Stanley is wearing full pajamas with like the stocking cap and everything. Yeah. We talked about Aaron sleeping upside down. I just yell at Kathy to wake her up. Yeah.
We brought it up last time too, but I love that Aaron says, Stanley, it's pretzel day.
Yeah.
But we haven't actually seen a pretzel day with Aaron, which is like,
that's very true.
Oh, it's a good reminder that pretzel day has continued since we first saw it in season two or whatever.
Pretzel day transcends.
Yeah.
It's twice, actually. Dwight makes Kathy scream in bed first at this wake up, and then when he's spraying her with chemicals.
Oh, yes.
It's only because she makes the same pitch, like, as soon as that happened for the second time, I was like, oh, he already did this. Like, like forced her out of bed when she's like, ah.
Yeah. Great time to talk about Kathy.
Yes.
A new character in the show.
Ugh.
Who was introduced just a couple episodes before this.
Pam's replacement. Episode 7.
Yeah, episode 7. Thank you.
Evil Karen.
Evil Karen.
Like bad intentions,
I mean,
Karen.
Yeah, it's
openly bad intent. I got thoughts on.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Kathy.
Well,
is
now,
one
now's
of,
the time.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, at the
if only you had a microphone and a group of people listening to you.
It's because the tag at the end of Special Projects,
yes,
is so weird because it's just her. There's no one else in the office, and like. Technically, she works in the office, so it doesn't count towards the Vance Refrigeration guy's scene, and Cafe Disco is the only scene without a office member in it.
Yeah.
It's just a shot of her talking on the phone.
Yeah.
Explicitly saying to her friend that she's going to seduce Jim.
I know. It's
despite knowing that like he is happily married, has
weak.
A kid. Like
it's
conniving.
It's actually a really weak threat to Jim and Pam. Like it's a weak threat that the writers are making to Jim and Pam's relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like know what I mean? Like, Kathy is such a one-dimensional character who only matters to Jim. Like, I'll even say like in Pam's replacement when Pam is feeling like, oh, Kathy's kind of cute and everyone's now into Kathy, that is directed at Jim, not at Kathy.
Yeah, why is why is he making her laugh so much?
Yeah, yeah. right. Mm-hmm. So like, no one really has a relationship with Kathy besides Jim. Like, everyone just kind of treats her like she's just some other person. Like,
well, they
you know
do.
What I mean?
They do talk about how it's nice to have like a young presence in the office, and then
Pam
is
right.
"Yeah, that's right. Let's go to have someone hot at Pam's desk."
Yeah.
But I know. But
that's the one time.
Yeah, I think they have to do. They have to really establish Kathy as a threat to Jim or in Pam's relationship because, to your point, it does. Like in season 8, we don't really feel like there's a credible sort of a figure like that, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I wonder if anyone was worried that Jim was going to be tempted by this person who has nothing interesting about her besides that she's like hot. Like, I think we know Jim too well by this point.
She's Allie Larder. Pam's Beyonce.
That's Pam is Beyonce always.
That's right.
But yeah, I think they have to clarify her intentions. Number one, because it's not clear. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
To this point. And then later, especially too, when she's in Jim's room and she's not making a move, but she's there you know, and mm-hmm. And giving
she's
all
making
signals.
A move,
right? Yeah. Of course, yeah. But like it helps to kind of for us as the viewer to know
right.
what she's really thinking. You know
of
what I mean, she makes it very clear, so
yeah.
we don't have to, there is no doubt, right?
And yeah, yeah, yeah. And we have that scene with her. We also have it even introduced where they're talking about opening the store, and she's like, "Oh, it was my idea to be the hot
right.
girl." Like
yeah.
like she's right. clearly like. Is she relishes the role of that she's
how
cast
much
to play.
Yeah. I guess it's like a new twist on Kelly. Like if she was going to stick around, like if this was a character that they were going to explore more, like maybe there's something there, but it just felt like half baked. It just like, what are we going to do to mess with Jimmy and Pam? Oh, just throw in like someone who's like really trying to get him to have an affair with her.
I think the whole thing with Kathy being like, it was my idea, would be kind of funny and interesting if she wasn't also trying to make a move on Jim. Like,
yeah.
if she
yeah,
was
yeah.
just
that's
a character in The Office and she did that in the story, I'd be like, oh, that's kind of funny.
Yeah, she has, like, no...
But when you see that together, it's like, oh, you get more of a distaste for this character. Yeah. I guess one thing I'm curious to hear what you guys think is how much do you think Jim was tempted in the hotel room? Because he, like, looks
well,
way...
Enough that he is aware, uncomfortable, and
yeah.
asks her to leave.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's something kind of interesting about that. Yeah.
If he was truly, completely not tempted, he might not have been quite so fidgety and nervous
yeah.
and, like,
yeah.
you need to leave. Like, he could have yeah. just... He could have chilled out and watched the game. Obviously, he's like, you're doing this. You need to leave. I don't want you here. I'm no. not saying... I'm not saying whatever...
Right.
Like, what... The way Jim reacted was he was in the wrong. It's just that.
I mean, lest we forget, there were 2 to 4 camera guys and a boom operator in the room, too.
So. True.
Yeah. That's one thing that, yeah, yeah.
And Florida Stanley patting him on the back.
Right. Yeah, right.
Gets easier and easier, Jim.
Careful, Jim. He takes 5 bottles of
yeah.
little liquor.
No, he's got the little bottle.
He's like, bring the bottles back.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with it. I'm a pirate. Yeah, but yeah, I think it's an interesting.
Would you like to get a cocktail? Maybe go out for a little dancing.
Did I say Messina?
Yeah. Beautiful day now.
Yeah, it's interesting. Just that, like, I think we can agree that Jim feels a little bit tempted at the very least.
Sure.
But it's interesting to think how tempted he does feel.
Yeah.
You know?
I
because he does seem so relieved that Stanley comes by. He makes the Hail Mary to Dwight about bed bugs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're jumping ahead to After Hours, but of course, like, Dwight comes back and, you know, does the whole thing where he sprays the room with chemicals.
The chemical compound he swiped off the maid's cart. Amazing.
Yeah.
Let's go. Yeah. Really quick, though.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of Kathy, we have a shout out. Do we
oh,
not
yeah.
from our cold open last time?
Oh, yes. Shout out to Jess, who did send us the thing that was our cold open our last episode about the various characters on The Office with some iteration of the
yes,
name Kathy.
Right.
Kathy
I put it,
in this episode,
yeah.
Katie the purse girl, Toby's ex-wife named Kathy. You know, there's mm-hmm. a lot. There's a lot there.
Yeah. I put that as
thanks,
the cold
Jess.
Open because
yes.
You just have to find something to use sometimes.
Yeah. So,
but we didn't have your name ready
didn't
for the cold
not
open.
Give you a
shout anyway,
out. That's a
shout out. Anyway, let's back
let's
to Tallahassee.
To Tallahassee
what
episode.
Else do we need to unpack there in that episode?
Okay, well, this is where we get to meet Florida Stanley. We mentioned Florida Stanley.
Mm-hmm.
You're gosh dang right, we did.
But
yeah.
Would you like to get a cocktail?
The way he says this.
Yeah. Maybe go out for a little dancing.
It's so
lovely
amazing.
Day now.
A beautiful day now.
I think, so in this episode, we get two things. We get Nellie establishing that she is kind of the person in charge and the person Dwight is trying to impress for the role of VP of Sabre Retail.
I do really enjoy when she dupes Ryan. Into
yeah. yeah. A man, you say?
Do we? Okay, let's talk about Nellie.
Yeah.
And let's start it. This is her first speech to that room.
Don't think a woman can be a leader.
Okay.
You poor, simple boy. Expected a man, did you? Strong, powerful, huge, whopping penis. Well, sorry to disappoint, but my huge, whopping penis is right here, and I'm not afraid to use it. So stop looking at my breasts and start looking at my penis.
I mean,
it's a pretty amazing entry.
It's Catherine Tate. It's the most I ever like Nellie, is that one speech. It's
dude,
so good.
Catherine Tate. Just brings the heat. All of these episodes, I think she's so good. I think Nellie is so... She really has grown on me. Like,
yeah.
I think she does... Mm-hmm. I think initially with Nellie, there was a little bit of like, you're just this new... Who are you? What are you doing here? As I've watched it more, she's really grown on me. And I've gotten more used to her being there. And it's
yeah.
like, all right, I think she's hilarious.
In a
point in the show when I'm so not into certain versions of these characters. Like, I mean, I'd say Andy, maybe even Jim, and a couple others. Like, Nelly, this is the best Nelly. This is the best version of Nelly.
Yeah, I would agree. Sure, I think Nelly is at her most ridiculous in this moment. I think she is funnier when she's in a position of power versus when she is below Andy, and Andy has this real like kind of acrimony and this real anger that he directs towards her.
Yeah.
You know, that's not as funny as it is when Nelly, you know, one quote later says, so how did the special project come about anyway? Well, I interviewed to be the manager of your branch, points to Jim. After you decided that wasn't a good fit, I went on a shopping spree, very destructive, about 13 pianos. Then I realized, what if Saber had a store, right?
She grabbed me by the shoulders and she said, yes.
She's just brilliant. I think she's... Yeah. I think Kathy Tate's brilliant.
Another dynamic that we have in this, and not to really steer away from Nelly, but a note I made watching this episode was just Rainn Wilson unleashed.
Rainn Wilson unleashed.
Yeah.
Which is Did I say that bad? Should I say that again?
No, keep going.
Anyway, you just get to see him acting his heart out, you know?
Oh, yeah.
With appendicitis.
Appendicitis.
Yeah, taking all the antacid. The moment where he gets up and tries to pull down the screen, you know? Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And then when he tries to fight Jim, I mean, he's doing physical comedy.
He's trying
comedy.
To climb
doing...
the human pyramid.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then he's getting wheeled out and he says, don't remember me like this. Remember me as I was earlier, the guy who pulled down the screen.
No, he really is given a lot to do. I mean, it's like you've said, this arc is mainly about Dwight. Mm-hmm. Of like, let's go on this journey with Dwight to Florida to see if he can be in charge of people. And, you know, for the most part, despite not really having a sense of style, a sense of how to actually launch a store, I mean, he's obviously more committed than anyone's going to be. I mean, that's his main thing he tries to prove to Nelly is just... Not that he's good, it's just that he's committed. That's the only thing he cares about.
Basically, we don't see Jim go for this role.
No.
Jim shows no interest in wanting this particular role, which I think is super interesting. That Jim can be there as kind of this antagonist for Dwight, or someone who's kind of appreciating what Dwight is becoming, you know?
Yeah.
Later he says he's been bitten by a radioactive Dwight. You know? But I do think it's interesting that they bring in Packer as his sort of nemesis. Yes.
I could see the writing room talk about this of like, well, we can't have Jim and Dwight vying for this job. That's just played out at this point. What if, Packer. Oh, yeah. Let's bring him back in.
He moved to Florida. Yeah. They sent him to Florida.
He even comes in the same way. Quick query, Halpert. No way. Still queer? Packer. You can't put me down. Too strong.
Too strong.
Here's the cutaway moment. Packer. Yeah, Dwight and Jim tried to get me fired, but I landed on my feet down here in Florida. You see, this cat's got 9 lives and a 9-inch.
another cut.
Yeah, that's exactly what they
that
do.
Moment.
Yeah.
That moment when he's over Jim's shoulder and he goes, too strong. It's so good. It's so good. And the way that Jim, to his face, is just like, no way. I can't believe you're alive. And Packer knows it, and he doesn't care.
It's you make sure to stop by that Harry Potter world.
Yeah.
But I wanted to talk about, like, Dwight. I mean, it just kind of as part of the whole, just this.
What's up, my nerd?
This arc being so unique. Dwight has fallen into this kind of, like, bizarro like situation where like the rules of getting promoted are different now.
Yeah.
You know, like he and Todd Packer are like sexually competing.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. So
yes, they are.
Yeah.
It's very like it almost reminds me of like Eastbound and Down or something like that, or one of the Danny McBride shows where it's just like the stakes are high.
And it's intense.
It is as ridiculous as can possibly be. People are poisoning each other.
Life is sex.
There's, like I was saying earlier, the world becomes more crazy around Dwight, right? The role that he's going for is completely undefined. The person he's trying to impress is completely ridiculous.
No, he wants to be VP.
His nemesis, well, yes, but like it's an empty position,
right? Sure.
And they don't know what the store is going to look like.
It's literally a middleman of like her on that diagram. It's like her VP, everyone else. It's like, what is your job?
And he's going up against Todd Packer, right? There's something completely ridiculous about like the terms are completely intangible,
right?
There's
right.
something to that. Yeah.
Well, if you just look back at Michael Scott's like 7 seasons, he's always got David Wallace above him
Jan.
Or Jan.
or Ryan,
competent people.
And you were under her the
when
whole
they
time.
Hold those positions, yeah. So it's a shift. I mean, you know, we already know Robert California is kind of eccentric, but this gets ridiculous. Starts getting pretty out of hand.
I think, too, you know, in terms of Dwight being ridiculous and just kind of acting in a really funny way and louder sense of humor, when Dwight's in his chair and there's that joke about him being a masturbator. He says, I'm a master hunter. And Packard says, did you say masturbator? He said, no, my cousin Moe's. Now that's a masturbator.
He says, I'm a decent baiter, but my cousin Moe's, that's a masturbator.
Yeah. And then later when Dwight comes back from his appendectomy surgery and they do the introduction of the pyramid and they talk about the retail consumer habits. One of my favorite moments, one of the funnier jokes is when, you know, any questions, what are the three pillars of retail? And Aaron is whispering, convenience. And he goes, ingredients, service, burgers, building loyalty, killing royalty.
let's see how hard Dwight can commit. And it kind of works. I mean, in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, Packers.
There's only one thing, willpower,
Packers,
desire.
Yeah. Packers playing the pure sex game, and Dwight's playing the pure energy game.
Dwight,
just like I'm want it more.
Achieving goals left and right. I had two goals today. The first was to make myself the clear candidate for vice president. I achieved that, no thanks to my appendix. The second was to find a memorable souvenir for Philip. For that, I do have to thank my appendix.
Yeah.
That's a graphic little bag he holds up.
Yeah.
They did a really good job
my God,
with that.
It's barely healed. Yeah. I think it's interesting, too. This is also, to go back to Scranton, this is the moment where Andy becomes receptionist and shows a unique aptitude for it.
That's
I do love Andy as receptionist because he's so perfectly placed.
You realize, like, oh, my God, he would be. Mm-hmm. And he says, he's like, I think I found my calling. Mm-hmm. And I have an issue.
Ooh, that's the phone.
I have an issue with the writers because Pam comes up and she's like, this is a lame job or what does she say? I forget the specific.
Yeah. I don't know how it is, Andy. This job sucks.
Yeah. And it's just like, it's a little like, well, I don't know, like some people are really good at reception and that could be a good job sometimes.
Yeah.
And like, it's, I don't know, it's not a lame job, but, and it's like, obviously Pam did it for so long.
Pam did hate it.
But I almost thought Pam's reaction should be like, you're really good at this, Andy. Like,
let him do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Just let him do this.
Makes you happy.
At least till they get back. Like, why are you trying to say, no, don't do this.
Right.
Yeah. It doesn't solve their problem of not having a receptionist.
Exactly. And he's clearly very, very competent about it, you know?
Get the whole nine nards.
That the moment when he points out the colored pens.
You see this?
I mean, and they have the little laughs.
It's
like
nice.
That's a really nice little moment. Mm-hmm. I actually think that might be the peak of Andy in that moment. Like, I mean, as far as Andy's evolution from anger management bro in season three to like in season eight, the first half of season eight, likable, stable, trying his best.
Yeah.
I mean, his boss is Robert California, so he's a little messed up, obviously. But it's like he's actually maintaining a seemingly healthy relationship with Jessica.
I would argue that Andy's peak comes a little early. It's here. Mayo call. His name is Oscar. And he got some mail. And he better open it or go to jail because it's your taxes. His name is Kevin. No mail for him. But he's got a coupon for some frozen yogurt.
Kevin's a little concerned. He's like,
are those the lyrics?
Are those the lyrics? Yeah, I was like, well, you'd be excited about the froyo, dude. Anyway, yeah, I mean, Andy's a whole nother, we can get back to Andy, but where were we in Florida? Where did we leave this?
We were in Tallahassee.
Oh, pulling the screen
episode
down.
And the city.
That's correct.
Any last words about Tallahassee?
Yeah, I think the last thing that happens in this episode is we get the little button with Aaron, where Andy is receptionist, and a lady calls and asks for Aaron and talks about how she's really sweet and she's really appreciated, right?
Mm-hmm.
Something that we don't hear a lot from is people appreciating Aaron for one, you know, for being a receptionist or for anything like that. So it is kind of nice to hear an external client, you know, kind of talk about how much she appreciates Aaron. And it makes Andy think about how much he appreciates Aaron as well, which I thought is a really nice moment and kind of helps shade Andy and eventually his decision to go get her. Mm. And the last thing we get is the appearance from Famous Amos.
Back when I was a regular Amos.
Yeah.
Wait. I love that Aaron calls him Mr. Famous.
Yeah, excuse me, Famous?
Sorry, not Mr. Famous. Yeah, Famous, hi.
It's cookies. I bet it's cookies. Yeah.
I'm sure you get ideas for new cookies all the time, but I...
Is it oatmeal with no
the raisins? And she's just like, I'm sorry to have wasted your time.
I'll take my answer off the air.
They do a very good job throughout this whole Florida arc of sort of, well, actually Saber as a whole seems, you can tell that their corporate structure is very focused on getting celebrity endorsements or just people, celebrities involved
really true.
In Saber. Like it starts with Christian Slater in the opening video, but you get like Famous Amos.
Chuck.
You get Chuck, the cutout of Chuck Loves His Pyramid.
I begged you to be Chuck.
This is the face of a scary apparition you see before you die.
And getting Famous Amos here. It's just a funny little thing. You kind of get to know Saber a little bit better.
I always enjoy NBC's shameless self-promotion of its other shows.
Sure. Yeah, you got to do it. And yeah, and you know, all cooked up in that like Darth Vader helmet of Saber's headquarters, that building. Looks like a dark pyramid.
So, yeah. I mean, should we move ahead to the After Hours episode?
Let's do it.
Yeah. This episode is super unique.
This episode is bonkers.
Yeah.
This is the one. So this is the one that I wanted to just earlier when I was like, I'm going to jump ahead, is when we were talking about like Dwight's weird little world that is kind of like, materializing around him. Like this episode is like so crazy with Gabe spraying the like laxative into the drink 10 times. And like
everyone has to be there. It's not mandatory. It's compulsory.
Compulsory.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know if we ever actually end up talking about Nellie, because I did want to like do a little sidebar on Nellie real quick, because she comes in at this. I mean, she comes in Tallahassee, but at this point,
in After Hours, you mean?
It's in After Hours, but she comes in and in Tallahassee.
Of course,
and we really meet her, and obviously we've met her before, but we start to know her here.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like this force that comes in that like the show hasn't. She has Dwight energy and like a lot of Dwight going on and who she is, I feel like. And so I feel like we just haven't had someone else on The Office who's brought this level of energy before. Honestly, on the same level as Dwight in a lot of ways, in terms of just her pure self-confidence, her ability to believe in herself, and her ability to make others believe in her despite evidence to the contrary.
Yeah.
All of those things, I think, are very true to Dwight. And it's almost like Dwight's playing up to... He thinks, oh, this is someone the same as me. I think she's going to be impressed by how driven I am. You know, and she tells her whole story. And I don't know. I just wanted, like, what do you guys feel about Nellie, her chemistry within the show?
I mean, it's a character that they drastically change pretty quickly. I'm kind of bummed that how she works in Florida, they couldn't make it work in Scranton.
I agree. I love how much.
But they kind of did, right? I mean, she just takes the manager's job.
It fades so fast.
Well, I think Nellie is at her best when she is in a position of power and she can kind of express herself and give these very ridiculous monologues, similar to Michael, similar to Dwight.
Yeah.
I think you can tell that the writers are like, we really like this character and we want to have her continue to be a part of the show, right? I do think, especially in season 9, Nellie feels a little bit like a square peg. Mm-hmm. Like they have to round out her personality in a way that isn't, I bought 13 pianos, I spent a night of passionate love making with John Grant.
Sorry, she's way more like Michael than Dwight, as you say this out loud.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, wait, she's not like Dwight. She's way more like Michael.
And they give her like a lot of motivations and things that she what does Nellie care about, right? Having a child.
Pianos.
Right, yeah.
Most Michael's got
a gold Arabian slipper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've talked about
hatred
before.
Of musicians or magicians.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
We've talked about before too with the characters like Andy, where it's like, you know, Andy is funniest when he feels like he needs to impress people and when he stops caring about what people think, he's not as funny. With Nellie, there's something about her having like infinite power. She's like seems to like have no one above her, really. Like,
this Kathy is why I Bates say she is also like Dwight. Is she believes, even though someone might actually be her boss, she doesn't believe that they're above her. She believes that she is that at that high level. You know what I mean?
I just feel like when she gets back to Scranton, Robert California definitely is her boss, and then it's like, and then it just kind of starts to like, what I don't know, just her persona from Florida is slightly different now.
Yeah,
and it doesn't really hold on. They can't really hold on to it after that.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
No, totally. I mean, once you're back in an office working for someone, it's hard to have.
Like, I feel like if Joe was still CEO and they made Nelly manager, there could be something interesting there mm-hmm. where the manager, like where the CEO loves the manager and she can just do whatever she wants.
Sure.
And that would have been more interesting to me than what actually ended up happening.
Well, it'd be, you know, it'd be like getting a little David Brent back, like someone from England.
Right.
Who's
yeah.
totally full of hot air and is just completely full of themselves.
Yeah.
There is a moment where Nelly does talk about her sort of philosophy, and she says, I have one simple philosophy in business. If the seat is open, the job is open. It's how I came to briefly race a Formula One car. The three slowest laps ever recorded.
Incredible stuff.
That's the other thing she talks about, the American dream. It's just random.
Random. After hours.
Yeah.
We've just got, it's, I think it's mostly overnight.
It starts with them talking about an after work.
One might
event.
Say after
yeah.
hours.
Yeah.
Sean.
And it's just kind of a weird episode, man. It's just kind of, it's a little dark. I mean, it's just,
well, it's nighttime. It's nighttime.
long day at work, Sean.
I mean, we've already talked about Jim and Kathy and what we think about that. But like the whole thing with Dwight trying to win Nelly over and then getting Gabe to poison Todd. And then that seems to work. So she chooses Dwight. But then Dwight just leaves her out in the hallway.
Like, Dwight realizes he kind of can't go through with it. Or he doesn't want to go through it. The scene where Dwight comes back and looks over at Gabe, and Gabe gives him the thumbs up, and Packer immediately turns and vomits all over Gabe.
Yeah.
It's really
good. They don't make these cords and boot cut anymore. Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. So good.
We really get to see Florida Stanley here.
That's true.
Stanley is pretty much absent from the operations that we see happening at the hotel, at Sabre. I mean, he's in the sort of break room wearing the Sabre outfit with them, but we never see him doing any kind of work.
No.
Instead, we see him smoking cigars, driving a convertible, and seemingly out in nightclubs all the time.
Yeah.
Well, and Jim talks about how he thought he'd be spending more time with Florida Stanley, but Florida Stanley's kind of a loose cannon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a little bit much.
Which is where we see your quote from earlier.
Yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful day now.
I think, too, what we get here is this unique sort of little matchup of Ryan and Aaron. Which we see kind of hinted at when Ryan talks to Aaron about, he says, I want to sleep with you. What about Kelly? My thoughts exactly, right? Is this a joke? Yep. And he turns around and goes back to the kitchen and talks to Michael, you know? But they're together. Because Ryan is saying you need to send one, not both, of him and Kelly.
He's very clear about that. Not both.
The pictures that he projects on the wall of Andy's office too are so funny. Like pictures of like cool, trendy. It's just like people in a car wearing sunglasses and stuff.
Right.
It's like a
DJ backdrop.
Anyway, I love that Ryan and Aaron get this moment together where Aaron wants to order a waffle, and they like sneak into the kitchen so they can make Aaron a waffle, right? And then Ryan sort of makes his plea to her, you know. And then Aaron says, maybe in 6 months. Oh, 6 months. No, I'm in love with Kelly.
Dude, okay. I remember watching this all happen and yelling at the screen, like being so invested in like, get away from her. You get away from her. Like, you got to keep Ryan away from Aaron at all costs. I swear. It's like, this is the devil like trying to possess somebody. And I'm like, you just stay away from him, Aaron. Don't go near Ryan.
Well, I mean, Pam kind of does that later on when Ryan shows up riding the camel. Yeah. And Pam, boo. You are toxic. Yeah.
I love when Aaron's like, they go into the kitchen. Aaron's like, whoa, the lights are still on. Ryan's like, yeah, they keep them on because it's less expensive than turning them on and off. Aaron, I like how guys just know stuff all the time. Ryan, girls know a lot of stuff too, okay? And nobody knows more than you, especially me. And he just like
huge
gives
eye roll.
Look to
he
the
realizes,
camera,
yeah, like what he actually
like,
said.
Oh.
Yeah,
like this is hard.
Yeah.
And Ryan's clearly so he's so noncommittal. It's like this disease he has. He's just like immediately. He's like, oh, you want me to move to Florida with you?
Like, we can watch R-rated movies. We can get a dog.
Yeah. Like, oh, this is. He's like, this is great. Kelly Cahu is the thing. It's right, what he says.
One last ditch. Yeah. Kelly Cahu.
One last ditch Kelly Cahu effort.
Yeah.
And it's just funny because it's like he's just on this hamster wheel with Kelly back in Scranton, and he goes to Florida and he just wants to start it all over again with Aaron. And he's like, he makes this kind of movie move of like, let's get you that waffle.
Yeah.
And like, Ryan, I think more than any other character, is very aware that he's on camera.
Yeah.
Even though it's supposed to be a mockumentary and there's supposed to be a documentary cue, yeah, I feel like he does, winking towards it. He's the most aware of what's going on. And in that moment, he's like, I'm doing this mainly for the cameras and for me, not really for Aaron.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I just love, too, that there's something so funny about his decision. Like, they're already trapped together. Like, mm-hmm. he just says, mm-hmm. that's it, I'm out. Like, we'll just sit here silently.
And then they go get the waffles, and, like, you see cooks. There's cooks.
Yeah,
It's not someone, like, walking through the kitchen. It's, like, people starting a shift.
Yeah, exactly.
How long were they
there?
You want to get scolded?
They're trapped. Yeah, how long were they there? Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
As this goes on, we also see Kathy make her move on Jim.
Which I was going to say, this is one of my favorite parts of the Florida arc.
You pervert.
Is the bed bugs.
The bed bugs, okay.
Yeah.
This is a crazy testament to Dwight's loyalty to being of service. Mm-hmm. Because twice, he interrupts something that we know Dwight cares deeply about, which is getting the job. And he's like hitting on Nellie at the bar alongside Packer.
Just to
come. He leaves that to go investigate the bedbugs for Jim, who he hates. He hates Jim. But he goes and he does it anyway.
Well, if Jim has bedbugs, that means they're everywhere. I can't risk them coming back to Shrewd Farms. Our biggest attraction is our 200-year-old mattresses.
There's a lot of contradictions here, because later he wants to say, goodbye, Shrewd Farms. And he does this again when he comes back for the second time and makes this chemical compound that stings the eyes of everyone and basically fumigates Jim's room. He didn't have to do any of this. But it does make for fantastical physical, and the physical comedy is just great.
Well, my favorite part is Dwight saying, describe it, Jim. Brown, shiny, painful bite. Dwight, could be a bat weevil. Describes its mood. Did it seem sleepy? Jim, stressed. But to be fair, it was a tense situation. Dwight, fair enough. But after it bit you, did it run away fearful or did it walk away smug, self-assured? Jim, so smug. Like he thought it was funny, like this. Just
a little great outtakes.
That's a bed bug. Yeah,
really good bloopers from this scene of them trying to get that down.
One of my favorites.
I think it was probably a little improvised.
Yeah.
It's really good stuff. And like the lengths he goes to try and get Kathy chased away are really funny. And, you know, he even tries.
He could
before.
Just be like, you know what?
Well, he tries. Tonight. He's like, you know what? I'm married, yada, yada. And she's like, how little do you think of me? You know, and like that's her response. And then she immediately cuddles up to him
and
again.
Then he feels bad. Yeah.
Evil Karen.
Hmm. Anything else to say about that?
Yeah, I think it's interesting how, on one hand, just the way that Dwight creates the little trap, you know, in the bed. Like, I love that. And then later when he comes in with the chemicals.
Again.
Yes. And later when he comes in with the chemicals. You know, he says, if I were you, I'd just bunk with Kathy. I think that's such a funny little flip on that whole
thing. Where did he get that mask that he's wearing?
Who knows? Yeah.
He probably travels with it. I only assume Dwight's checking several bags anytime he travels.
But yeah, that seems to kind of diffuse all of the tension between Jim and Kathy, number one. And then also between Dwight and Nellie. There's a moment where Dwight seems to kind of think better of needing to, you know, sleep with Nellie for this job, right? Mm-hmm. At one point, Jim says, is that really how you want to get this job? And he says, such a chorus girl. You know, so I think it's kind of interesting for Dwight's character that he doesn't want to do that. You know, it seems that he kind of, I don't know. I think it's an important character choice for Dwight that he doesn't go through with it.
Right.
Because eventually he does get the job when they test the store out. And it leads to a really like a funny scene where Jim and Dwight are, you know, in the bed together eating one death by chocolate, one bananas Foster.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think we should move forward to test the store.
Totally.
Test the store. I think the Test the Store is my favorite episode of the Florida arc. Mm-hmm. I love Aaron pretending to be the
Tabitha
Cacciarella Music Festival fan. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed a lot of the comedy of Jim actually kind of trying to like help Dwight in this episode. The jokes of like Dwight like letting the like opening up the store and letting people in and mm-hmm. like pushing them down to create a stampede, or them kicking all the old people out of the store. I love this episode. I think that this is the funniest of the Florida arc.
Yeah, they really created an environment where they can all kind of go crazy with this weird technology, this like this tablet that they're selling and these phones, right? I think it's important to acknowledge that at this time, an iPad was a pretty new sort of invention, or a pretty new sort of piece of technology. Yeah. We didn't really know what they were like. And so it seems super dated now. Especially when Jim talks about how there's a USB port and Wi-Fi is coming, you know,
yeah,
in 2013.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Like, bloggers have a major role in this, right? And like some of the pop cultural things that they talk about are kind of dated as well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It is really funny to watch all the characters kind of interact in this environment, you know, when Dwight is kind of calling out the roles for everyone, you know?
Right.
Yeah, let's see. So
they have the meeting there.
Today is press day, and press is going to make or break this store. And for a tech company, press can only mean one thing. Bloggers. Dossier on bloggers. Bloggers are gross. Bloggers are obese. Bloggers have halitosis. You're going to love them. Ryan is going to be the main event today. He's the pitchman who is going to give the feisty yet profound speech worthy of a World's Fair. Ryan, are you ready to do this? And then he says later, Kathy, you will be the hot girl who talks to bloggers. Packer, you will be the sexual predator who has come to prey on the trendy teenage girls who are obsessed with the pyramid. And then Packer says, Shroot's out to get me, but I'm playing the long game. As soon as he messes up, I swoop in like a sexual predator.
Oh my gosh. I don't think I've ever noticed that.
I know. It's so. Because when he first says sexual predator, he's like taken aback. He's like, I'm not that.
I don't see what that gets us, but I'm a team player, is what he says. Yeah.
Like a sexual predator. Good.
Mm-hmm. Dwight opens the gates. They let everyone in. This is Fatty Gruesome. She writes for Wired. My name is Patty Grossman. Yeah.
Should we talk about this presentation?
And really,
everything that leads up to it.
Yeah.
Before we do, I think we should talk about this is a very time stamped moment, but when the bloggers see Jim talking on his regular phone instead of his Arrowhead, this would be perfect for my daily fail blog. It's like, man, that really stands, you know.
Yeah. I also love that part because one of my favorite lines of Nellie's is after that too, where she's like, "We gave you an Arrowhead for the day." Oh yeah, she's like, "We gave you an Arrowhead for free." For the day. How hard would it have been to do this? Mm-hmm. Hello. Hi, sweetie. It's Jim. I'm calling you from my new Arrowhead, which is why my voice is crystal clear and my hand will never get tired because of the ergonomic shape. The way that she hits the ergonomic shape. I love that.
Also, quick shout out to Stanley keeping a piece of pizza in his holster. Yeah. Yeah.
Another great gift.
By the way, the ultimate office swag would be getting a pyramid strap-on bag. That would go so deep if you just wore that out.
But you know what? It should be
lined like a
bag that you could keep food in.
Yeah.
Like, so you could keep pizza in it.
Like the lunch bag lining?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Ooh, that's a good piece of merch.
Where can you find that?
Let's talk about the presentation.
Yes. Okay. First of all, the scene leading up to it where the show decides to just take a dive into Ryan's psyche for like a minute and a half is so funny. I don't know why. It makes me laugh. The way Ryan is sort of playfully, but very, it's very tense.
Yeah.
Like Ryan is right on the edge the whole time. And as soon as, when Jim's being his mom and he's like, I would just fix this. And he's like, fix it. I knew you didn't like it. And it's like, he is just on the edge of blowing. But for a while there, he's like appreciating that Dwight's acting like Kelly.
Yeah, I know. That it's actually like, working.
And he's like, And he's like, you're so ignorant. Like, I have the quote here. Ryan says, "You're so ignorant. You barely know what you're talking about. This is so ridiculous. You really need to read a couple books." What's a book? Oh my God, you're so embarrassing. My mom would say the best stuff though. Looking at Jim and like the way Jim like tries to like, you could do it, Ryan. Amazing.
Yeah.
And then Ryan freaks out and leaves.
Yeah. Fix means you hate it. I knew it. I need something to drink. Jim, get him a water. No, not a water. Not a sports drink. I hate everything in that fridge. Not red. Get me something yellow or green from a nearby store. Not red. I love that.
Also, I think this is the moment, too, where they have to kick out the old people who come in to try to make it seem new and trendy. And that's when Aaron meets Eileen.
Yes.
Or Irene, I should say.
Irene, of course. Mm-hmm. Of course.
And I love when Aaron says, sorry about kicking you out. We just don't want our brand associated with death. And she and Irene says back, it's okay. I'll go to the Costco and search for handsome men. Everything Irene says is so funny.
So funny.
She's so cool. Mm-hmm. She knows how to like
she's a cool
use the computer
lady.
So well. And she likes going looking for hot men.
But but back in the store, they do get Jim to play Chuck. Right, that's like the one thing that they get him to do. And they haven't put on the costume and put on the eyeliner and everything. And a moment that I noticed that I don't think I noticed before is they say, all right, get in the costume. And Jim is in the room and he unzips the suit bag and he pulls out like a really tiny men's shoe that he just holds up in one hand. It's so funny.
By the way, it should be said, Ryan's not there. He says, I'm sorry. I lied. I'm not in the bathroom. I can't do it. I need to see my mom. I'm going home. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
But then we cut to the presentation where Clox is playing in the background. And Jim gives the most ridiculous speech. It's just nothing.
The eye makeup.
Yeah. On one hand, it's nonsense. And on the other hand, it's gobbledygook.
It's great.
But
it's,
they eat it up because he starts saying things that they all start nodding along. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh,
this is what he says. I've been through a lot of issues in my life. I've seen drug addiction, unemployment. I've been in a relationship that tore my heart apart without ever being able to accept that love drove the pain. And people just clap for
that.
Yeah.
Right. When I was 10 years old, my parents took me to Disney World. I cried the whole time. I was not able to comprehend the beauty that was before me. I just wanted to go home.
Wow.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Wow. Wireless will be available in 2013. You can play anything from Chuck to Cars 2.
Oh.
With the pyramid, you have the connection to everything in time and space. And then you get the last image of Ryan.
Yeah.
Just
saber. Popping up.
It's time to come home. Kind of, despite everything that's happened in this arc so far, for some reason.
This is the great success.
This all works. Yeah.
It works. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Despite everyone's best efforts to not make it so. It kind of works.
I think if I went to a boring like store opening for some weird product that seemed cheap, which we learn later that this is kind of a, I mean, it doesn't even have Wi-Fi until 2013, but like,
it's interesting.
But yeah, I think that if I was one of these bloggers, I would be like, hold on. Now you've got my attention.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Like, wow, this is ridiculous.
Yeah. I saw the guy with the pizza in his pouch earlier. Now this.
That's right. And everything goes well. Dwight gets the VP promotion, which brings us to last day in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Jim spins the sign.
Yeah. Gets shown up by the guy down the road.
Really quickly, we glazed over this, but go ahead. In After Hours, we do have the moment where everyone back at Dunder Mifflin is staying late to kind of get
these orders. That's right.
We get the dramatic moment between Daryl and Val and Brandon.
Val.
Where, Brandon brings in a Jamaican feast, man, is what Andy says. Yeah. And
Phyllis's reaction to like Jamaican food.
She's like, oh, if I wanted to eat Jamaican food, I'd just hire a bunch of bodyguards and go there.
Oh, my God. A perfect example of how Phyllis can be so bad.
Kelly exclaims like, you know, this is the most exciting thing that's ever happened here, you know? And so they make Daryl read out the text, you know?
Yeah.
Got a lot of extra ice cream. You want some?
About to get my
fry on.
No tact. Mm-hmm. Who would walk into your girlfriend's work at a meeting she's having and publicly accuse
her
of cheating?
To be fair, he does talk to Daryl on the phone earlier.
Right.
Oh,
he asked
for
the number for shipping, and he's like, hold on, let me get a pen. He's like, why would you need a pen? He's like, hold on, I got my reasons.
Back off, I got my reasons.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, but none of that is like hinting that he just says he knows Val. Friend. I don't know, he Brandon goes way too, he gets overreacts.
But there's a lot of tension there, right? A
lot of tension.
I'm glad you brought up Val because it's the second time in this story arc where we get a one-dimensional character who just exists solely for one
man
main character. Hmm. Yeah, that's true too.
It's a man, dude.
But I mean, it's like
Val's like, really flat.
There's so
really
much flat. About yeah, Val that's like so weird. Like, I mean, that she, on Valentine's Day, she's saying that she doesn't have a boyfriend, that her mom called and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Even though
that's
Daryl
knows. My mom's name is Brandon.
So strange. And so I guess it's like she's like totally like she's like, I know you spoke to my boyfriend and I'm still going to tell you that it was mm-hmm. a woman and or it was my mom. And then.
Well, she's kind of playing into the game because Daryl calls her out. He's like, oh, that was your mom.
So
and
she
she's
does
like,
it. So
yeah.
What she does it. So she's not serious about the
she's
relationship.
Flirting.
And then yeah. It later is like, oh, hey, let's order catering from my boyfriend. Like,
it's weird.
Yeah,
it's super weird.
I think we should talk about Val in another.
We'll
episode.
Talk about Look, Val at another time.
We'll do a three hour episode on Val yeah. is coming next week.
But I wanted to bring up that they are trying this like in different ways during this
yeah,
arc.
They're trying
throwing
to
new people at yeah. us, like just to like stir the pot. Mm-hmm. And I don't appreciate it. Mm-hmm. I want some 2-3 dimensional characters.
Mm-hmm. I hope you like Goat. Okay. and then
Daryl, they're so elegant.
Just for the sake of kind of covering everything, so we've talked about what's going on in Dunder Mifflin during After Hours, but in Test the Store, what's happening is Andy comes in with a black eye, and
what's this about a black guy in the office?
Nice,
yes, well played, sir. But yes, they bring in they have Toby lead the self defense class, and it's pretty ridiculous. We get the guest appearance from Tig Notaro,
yeah.
bringing in her daughter.
You do good work.
Beat up a fancy man. Yeah.
My friend uses your paper. Yeah. You do good work.
This is about escaping with your life. So strike, scream, and run. All right, let's try it. Creed. Yeah.
And one of those scenes start. Doesn't one of those scenes start with Toby talking about like now if they're into?
Oh yeah. So like, here's what Toby says.
Having sex with a dead body.
Now, if your attacker is willing to defile a corpse, you better stop playing dead right away and make it known that you're alive. That's what Tig Notaro interrupts. And the easel or the little whiteboard sort of thing that they have mm-hmm. behind him, the big pad. I think it says playing dead. You know?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I've never wait, is that a deleted scene or is that in the show?
No, it's in the episode.
I have never caught that before. That's
we also skipped over Andy getting punched by a little girl.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. That's just a funny thing.
Standing up for Pam. Yeah.
Right. And this is all like It does feel like so much of what's going on with Andy while everyone's away is Andy's becomes a bit of a punching bag.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Literally for everyone.
In this case. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's just a kind of a funny thing. And it's sort of like when he comes back and then he goes to Florida, it's just this weird.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the writers were like, let's get all the baggage with Andy out of the way before we send mm-hmm. him on this long journey. In a way.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah.
Ball droppings can be beautiful. For example, when it turns an awkward soprano into a rich, full tenor.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. Should we go to the last?
Just one last thing. We get to see Kelly get up and attack Toby.
Oh, yes.
And the easel behind him just says begging for mercy.
Right. Right. I was a 12-year-old bully.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. So we get that little scene. But yeah, we can jump forward now to Last Day in Florida.
Let's finish this off.
Last Day in Florida. You know, we get the cold open with Dwight's treasure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's a great one.
That's a
yeah.
good one.
Everyone looks at Creed.
Yeah.
It's you have to be insane to
all
open
of
that.
Us. Yeah.
Dart.
Yeah. Yep. But, you know.
A delayed poison dart. Dwight is ingenious.
Well, we don't know it's poison.
Oh, that's true.
All of a sudden, we're on the golf course with Dwight, Nellie, Robert California, and Jim. Dwight is, you know, beside himself. He's the store is a success. Mm-hmm.
Dude, he's strutting so
it
hard.
Looks like he lives in.
He's making fun of Jim.
Yeah. Oh, he's making fun of Jim.
He's so puffed out. He's being an asshole. Totally.
He,
do you think that's I didn't find it to be in character at all.
No.
That not that he's being an asshole and puffed out. That's how he is a lot of the time. But that he's just immediately like, screw Scranton, screw Schrute Farms, screw Moe's.
Yeah.
I'm now a corporate manager. That's what I do. And it just, I don't know, it just never felt
yeah,
like Dwight.
I get that. But
like corporate
I get that.
Cutthroat, that's not Dwight.
I would agree that it's maybe a little overdrawn, especially the way he kind of exaggerates and he golfs away the, you know, present that Jim
he's
gets
golfing?
Him. Yeah. But yeah. I think
Dwight doesn't golf.
But I think there's an element of, you know, Dwight's whole kind of trajectory has been not being able to break through in any sort of way, right? Mm-hmm, he doesn't take over from Michael in season three when Michael thinks he's going for the job. He doesn't get recommended by Michael to take over the branch. He shoots the gun when he does get the thing, and he has to come in as Jacques Souvenir, right? And it even says in season nine, you know, I've made too many mistakes. I'm never going to be manager of this branch. So, and there's even an episode where he goes to Florida and tries to campaign for himself to Robert to be like the head of printer sales.
Yeah.
And at every step, he's kind of turned away. And in this one moment, Dwight seems to have broken through. So it does, I think, hold up that Dwight is really excited about this seemingly, this new opportunity that he's never thought he would ever have before.
Yeah.
But I agree, it does seem a little strange to be turning his back completely on, like, Schrute Farms, for example.
Like, I could see if all this was for the manager position, but it's not. It's for this corporate job in Florida. Mm-hmm. And it's like, Dwight, you don't belong at a corporate headquarters in Florida.
But presumably it pays a lot more than the manager job. Sure.
He's,
you know?
I mean, Dwight is, in many ways, very childlike. He is very excited about this new opportunity. If they had kept the store, if Robert didn't tank it and he stayed, Dwight would have started missing Schrute Farms eventually.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't always know what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I get that. I get that he doesn't even mention it. He doesn't even...
Yeah, like, he just becomes this,
not even like,
this,
you know,
corporate villain right away.
Right.
It is weird.
It is interesting to me that Robert, you know, on one hand, he invites Jim to come down for this sort of project, but then he also confides in Jim that it won't be Dwight's day. You know, let Dwight have his fun.
Sure.
You know, he talks about how he's going to tank the presentation. And in a very, another unique sort of moment for, of clarity from Robert California, he talks about the reason that we sell our products online and over the phone. They're cheap. They're unintuitive. The Sabre store would work if we adopted the Carnival model of leaving town once everyone's wise to us. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
funny,
I think
the houses are always colonials and the penises are always circumcised.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, we get to see Dwight kind of preparing the presentation. Mm-hmm. He is now that he's in this position of power, he's really commanding over Todd Packer.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
I love when he talks to Jim about, what, your stylist ran out of messy spray? And everybody laughs. You know? And then later he says, it's going to take you a while to get through airport security with all of your beauty products.
Yeah, he's drunk on power
this
entire
absolutely.
Episode.
Yeah.
And it's really funny to watch him go through the motions. And of course, yeah, maybe that's why he's sort of enamored with himself in the moment and he starts acting out. And ultimately, I mean, this all becomes about Jim and Dwight.
Yeah. Well, I love when Dwight is talking to Todd and Gabe and Nellie and Kathy, and Jim walks in. He's coming in to tell him, hey, like, you know, you're going to get fired. Jim's like, all right, there he is. Dwight, what are you doing here? I thought I got rid of you. Jim, can I just talk to you for one quick second? Dwight, what, your stylist ran out of messy spray? Everyone laughs.
There it is.
Yeah. Actually, it's for your own good. I think maybe we should, Dwight. You want to do something for your own good, turn around, walk out that door, do not stop till you get to Scranton, find my cell phone charger, mail it back to me, and then go to hell. I don't know. It's so good. Man. I love it.
It's brutal. I mean, and it ends with them, you know, we'll get to where it ends up. But
I mean, it we get the moment where Pam is kind of coaching Jim about like how he has to go back and save Dwight, right? And we see Jim make this last ditch Hail Mary effort to literally stand in between Dwight and his what would be his downfall, you know.
Tackles him.
Yeah, which I think is it's a really great moment. It's really funny physical comedy.
I love
when Dwight revs up and is trying to slide under.
Well, and again, I mean, to your point you've always made about Pam's as the main character of the show, I mean, it's really her. Cuz Jim's like, "You saw
remotely.
I tried. I got to go get a plane." Jim starts to walk away. They talk on the phone. And that's what Pam tells her. It's like, if Dwight's going to get fired, you have to tell him. And he goes back and tackles him.
Mm-hmm.
Leads to their fight, delays it just long enough that Todd Packer swoops in like the sexual predator that he is.
There is kind of a... a catharsis of watching Jim and Dwight actually fight.
Yes.
After all of these years of pranking and going back and forth. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's something really satisfying
and
about
it's
watching
such
them actually
petty fighting.
Yeah, and it's like kids wrestling. You know what I mean? Like, they're not punching each other or anything, right?
Uh-huh.
Dwight licks his hand. You know,
so much saliva. Yeah.
Yeah. The biggest thing that happens is like I think Dwight picks up Jim and just drops him.
Yeah.
You got anything else you want to talk about? Nope.
Dwight tries to slide between his legs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's just so many good moments throughout that whole fight. And meanwhile, like Todd Packer's in there. Just
Todd Packer gets promoted in a second. And then all of a sudden gets fired from that job with
He's
no
like,
contract.
I've been here for 30 minutes. He's like, I've been in this job for a half hour. But yet allows Nelly to put all the blame, or Robert California puts all the blame on them.
Right, right.
Robert California is just like, I don't know. Yeah, who knows what he's going through his head. And Nelly then suddenly is like, don't blame Todd Packer. Fire the employee, not the man.
Yeah, you know,
it's the whole thing. It's very strange. It's a whole...
The logic of this, how this whole thing shakes out in the end doesn't really make sense. But I think, you know, we know Robert California is kind of a kook in his business ventures. So.
I'm thinking of what Harry Janarone says at the end of Turf War.
Yeah.
He says, Robert's running this place into the ground. We're not going to be doing this in 6 months, right? Mm-hmm. And to a large extent, he's right. The store doesn't last. You know, none of these sort of projects and endeavors really end up lasting very long.
Right.
And I think right after we see Todd get fired and Dwight exiting the room and helping Jim up, it kind of cuts to them back in Scranton. Dwight comes back, and when one of them, and Kelly mentions that Dwight, what are you doing here? I thought you would be in Florida. Jim, like, really jumps in and kind of deflects, and he says, yeah, the crazy thing about that is, wow, you look great. Did you lose some weight? She says, thank you. For someone who actually notices this, no, I did not lose weight, but I started using my makeup to contour my face to look skinnier. I actually put on 5 pounds. And it totally deflects from Dwight coming back, and then I think in that moment, it feels like the office is kind of back together.
We're back.
Obviously, yeah. And I don't know how much we want to get into this, but in Get the Girl, Andy does go back down to Florida to get Aaron. We haven't talked about Aaron in this particular episode, but this is where Aaron is living with Irene.
Yeah.
You know, and
boiling Gatorade and
banging the TV,
recycling
trying to video
the hot
chat.
Dog water.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah. So make a video chat. You just video chat.
Yeah. Passwords. You don't make a video chat.
What's your password?
Video
Aaron 123. That's a terrible password.
I love too. Irene's like Aaron's awesome. Like getting so annoyed with her. She's like, okay.
Yeah, I know.
She's like randomly dropping the pills into the pill box. Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
Hilarious. Yeah. I think we might talk about Get the Girl. Maybe I don't know about what you guys think, but I think in an Andy Aaron episode.
It could be an episode profile.
Let's do an Andy
it doesn't
Aaron
really
episode.
Feel like worth talking about.
No, we'll do Aaron and Andy.
I'd love to kind of get your thoughts overall on the Florida.
One last thing to talk about before we wrap.
Sure.
Is Daryl and Kevin or Daryl and Toby selling Girl Scout cookies?
Yes.
This is the
hysterical.
Last sort of piece. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think that one thing I like about the other characters being in Florida is that it gives the characters in Dunder Mifflin the opportunity to have smaller, more contained sort of stories. So like Andy is receptionist, right? Daryl and Toby selling Girl Scout cookies, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, as I said to Toby, doing stuff unencumbered by Michael or Dwight. Yeah.
The self-defense class. And then, you know, you think about Daryl trying to interpret what a beanie gift means from Val.
Right,
those are pretty small, mundane stories. And the tone of this season is a bit louder and a bit brighter than it would be maybe in like season two. Mm-hmm. But it is nice to see, as a contrast, things going crazy in Florida, something that's a little more contained back in Dunderman.
Yeah. Yeah.
I made a note. Oscar's the only member of accounting that's not fought over in the series because we see Daryl and Toby fighting over Kevin for Girl Scouts, and of course, Andy and Dwight fighting over Angela. But poor Oscar, left in the lurch.
Poor Oscar.
Let's not forget Kevin and Meredith kiss.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a forgotten office kiss. Mm,
so good.
Ryan Baumgartner doing, who I believe directed one of these episodes, did he not?
Sorry, I was going to mention that. He directed, I want to say Tallahassee. Let me just double check.
Yeah, Kevin.
In that moment, there's a moment where Kevin says, No, wait, no, I'm buying. I make the rules. I actually do want you to fight over me. I want to be wined and dined and 69. Angela says, ugh. And Kevin says, metaphorically 69. Ew, perverts. Mm-hmm. No offense, Oscar.
The turn.
And Oscar is so Oscar's upset. Like,
And then the turn that Kevin goes from, you know, hello, my baby, hello. Like right. They're singing the songs to him, to then Kevin doing that to try and get them to sell him cookies again is so short and it goes so quick. And it's a lot of good Kevin stuff going on back at home.
Yeah, it's true. Brian
Baumgartner.
Brian Baumgartner directed After Hours.
Nice.
And then speaking of just like calling people perverts, there's another great line in this in Tallahassee when Dwight is on the phone with the paramedics and he says, yes, a complete inability to pass gas, pervert.
Yeah, that's right. I picked that up this time, too.
But yeah, I just love Daryl being pitted against Toby. That's such a funny,
funny
sort of
duo.
Confrontation.
Yeah, and it's like they each have daughters, works out. So I don't know. What do you guys think with this whole arc? Because like at the end of the day,
Robert
California
resets.
Is like, do this. And then is like, nope.
Yeah.
And nothing really changes except that Nelly has been introduced.
Yeah.
And we have the whole Andy and Aaron thing.
Yeah. Well,
after you.
We're both starting at
Babalu.
While there are so many funny moments in this arc, and I do love, I love Test the Store, and I love so many moments from this. I do not like this story arc and, it's not the show I want to watch. I want to see the Office in the Office. There's just something about,
so you don't like Dinner Party.
Of course I like Dinner Party. Of course I like Dinner Party.
Hey, you're comparing apples and Osabuco.
Yeah.
Okay. They're not the same.
Come on. That's a Michael Scott.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I, but
you, my friend. Sorry, go ahead.
It's too long. It's too long with like being out of the office, and I mean, I think Edwin's said this before. Like the Florida arc feels like a fever dream where they're, you know, in a totally different place, and they're all split up, and they're selling triangular iPads now, and it's
Robert California's fever dream. The whole thing,
right?
Or Florida Stanley's fever dream. That might be more accurate.
I don't want to say that I could have done without it because I do love things like Florida Stanley, and I do love.
Yeah, we didn't really talk too much about him.
I do love, you know, he's Dwight's whole thing with appendicitis and pulling down the screen and their whole like all their interactions in the hotel when he's waking everybody up. I mean, those things are great. But there's something I don't know about you guys, but I feel when I'm watching the early seasons and they're just in the office the whole time, like that just feels comfy and cozy to me. And these are the you know, while I can appreciate the Florida arc, it doesn't make me feel all warm and fuzzy.
It's twice removed. There's no Michael, and now they're in Florida.
It's not the episodes I like to fall asleep to.
This is by far the most different series of episodes in the whole show.
Yeah.
It is the most unique and singular little chunk of the whole show, right? And I agree. It is the least true to what The Office kind of is and sort of stands for, which is a bunch of people selling paper in Pennsylvania, right? Yes, to your point, it's like a dream that you have where it's like, why are they all in Florida and they're selling weird things? And it's like a snow globe that gets all shaken up and everything's in out of place, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That said, I actually really love this arc. And I know that whenever we ask for my opinion on things, it's like, I always love all of it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Which,
Sean's like, no thanks. Yeah, Edwin's like, yes, please.
Yeah.
And I'm like, guys,
I love how weird it is and how different it is and how broad it is comedically.
Yeah.
I love there are a lot of weird jokes. Even that, I'm thinking now of when the punchline is Dwight saying dragging sticks, you know, they're like listing activities and weird hobbies. But I love it for how weird and unique and strange it all is. And strangely, it is one that I actually end up like rewatching. That I'm kind of drawn to just because of how strange it is and how different it feels.
Oh, okay.
At the same time, like, I don't think objectively it's like the best of The Office or the most true of The Office or what you'd recommend to people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But like, I like it a lot for what it is. In a weird way, it's really dense in terms of what all happens in that. In a weird way, it reminds me of like a later season of The Simpsons, you know, where it still has the ability to make me laugh, but it's not really true to what it was and what made people really fall in love with it.
I was actually thinking the same thing. It's like, It's Always Sunny has a season, a lot, Dennis isn't in a lot of it, and it's weird. Trailer Park Boys has a season where the whole thing takes place just outside of a trailer park, and it's just different. It's weird. Mm-hmm. And this is like the section of The Office where it's just different. It's weird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's different. It's weird. There's my analysis.
Jeez. I mean, Michael Scott leaving, makes it different and weird. And all of a sudden, we're going to change it up even more.
Different and weird is not bad. It's actually quite good. And in this, I think for this arc, it works more often than not.
It reminds me a lot of when a star basketball player is playing in a different team near the end of their career. I'm thinking of Dwayne Wade on the Bulls. Thinking of Brandon Roy playing for the Timberwolves. Like, you still love them, and you still go out to watch them.
Iverson,
but it just feels different.
Iverson
on the Grizzlies.
Memphis.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It just feels very different, you know.
Vince Carter and any number of teams.
Yeah. It's different. You have a lot of love for, you know, I guess those players, but and the show, and you can appreciate it, but it's very different from what you maybe first experienced when you first fell in love.
Rudy Fernandez on the Nuggets.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts?
Deep one for my Portland fans.
No, I think we just gave them.
I have a couple just last notes I want to shout out.
Yeah.
Stanley's 1,000-yard stare in the shuttle on the way home.
Yeah.
I laughed a very long time just watching Stanley the whole time Jim's on the phone. he's really, really bummed.
Oh, God.
Florida Stanley dies in that moment, and we never see him again. Daryl with some all-time game when he goes, by the way, the idea of you and me together, I don't think it's crazy.
Dot, dot, dot.
He does the callback. That's an insane move. The sort of thing that made Kelly call him the world's most complicated man. Says exactly what he's thinking. Last thing I want to point out, just something that bothers me, but it's also kind of amazing. Nelly says she's going to meet Dwight 7 minutes from their time at the bar. In that time, Dwight gets the note from Jim. He makes a chemical compound swiped off a maid's cart, sprays down the bed, and receives the room service that Kathy ordered, got it sent over to Dwight's room all in 7 minutes before Nellie shows up and knocks on the door, and they're halfway through their desserts.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I mean, we do see Dwight's time management skills at the beginning.
He's a machine. He's absolutely a machine.
Yeah.
He's incredibly good. Those are my only notes.
Love it.
And Dwight talking about Genghis Khan at the bar.
Oh yeah,
mirrors the Benihana Christmas where he's talking about how to kill a goose.
Got one. Where this is just so small, but Nellie seems to be like leaning towards Packer, and she says, "You look like Ed Harris if they stretched him out."
Oh my god!
And Dwight comes in with the last ditch effort, and he says, "Hey, you want to see a picture of me trapped under a tree?"
Trapped under a tree.
Love that he has that pen.
And on that note, conference room.
All right, you know what? That's it. Conference room, 5 minutes.
Okay, so for this week's conference room, I have a quick little thing that I wanted to talk about. This is kind of a follow-up on what we were talking about last week with Toby. And there are moments in our conversation where I felt like we were getting a little too deep into the analysis of Toby. We were like, well, Michael views Toby this way because he sees this.
I don't think we got
this
deep enough.
Yeah. So here's what I wanted to talk about, right? Here's what I wanted to talk about. And we can keep this in if it feels relevant. But basically, I was drawn to this concept of interiority. That's what I was thinking about in that moment. Right after we finished wrapping that episode, I mentioned it and I was talking about this concept, and you said, why didn't you say that we were recording the episode? And I was like, because I thought about it just now.
Sure.
I put the term in my shoe and I forgot about it until now. So basically the idea is that when we're watching a TV show, we don't know what the characters are thinking. We can only see and interpret and infer based on what they do on screen. As a counterpoint to this, when you're reading a book or a novel and it's from a third person point of view, the author will tell you what the character is thinking. So just to give an example from Game of Thrones, and this is just, I'm making this all up, but it's like,
please tell me.
In the TV show, we see Jon Snow walking down the halls of Winterfell and he clearly looks very sad, right? But if we're reading Game of Thrones, it's Jon Snow walked through the halls of Winterfell. He was thinking about his past and Ned Stark or whatever it was, but we get that interiority. And I felt like when we were talking about Toby, we were verging into assuming that we knew what the character was thinking, mm-hmm. when really we can only make observations based on what the character does. We actually touched on this a little bit in this episode when we were talking about Kathy's phone call. You were talking about how Kathy says very explicitly that she's planning to, you know, try to
seduce
him.
Jim.
Yeah. And I think that moment is super important because we don't get the interiority on Kathy. We only get to see what she does, right? Mm-hmm. And she doesn't give any sort of a real strong signal that way. But by giving that sort of phone call and by showing that dialogue, that signals so clearly to the audience exactly what her motivations are and exactly mm-hmm. what she's thinking, which sets up the move that she makes on Jim in a different way, you know? Mm-hmm. So anyway, I wanted to spend a minute to talk about that concept because I think it's super interesting in the way that we think about and analyze TV shows, that that TV shows almost always have to show and not tell.
Oh, no, that's a really good point. And like, I feel like that happens in plays a lot. In Shakespeare, you get a character between scenes will come off to the side and they'll
soliloquy.
Yeah, and they'll say like what they desire or what they want to do. And it just lets the audience be very clear of like, this person wants to do X, Y, Z. And you're right. Yeah, like we don't get that sometimes, but you know,
I just think as we try to think more deeply about the show, and I think that's what we would like, you know, this show to do is get people to think more deeply about The Office, and to, you know, we all love it, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're this far in this episode, I'm sure you love The Office. If you're stuck with us this might
be our longest one yet, guys.
Exactly. This is after hours. After hours, guys.
This is super long.
But anyway, it's just something that I thought I'd mention. There are a couple other concepts like this that I'd love to talk about in the context of The Office that we haven't talked about yet, but I would love for that to be sort of a different segment we could bring in.
I would love to, like, I mean, I don't know, hopefully this makes sense, but like, to counter that argument of like looking at interiority and like, this is kind of how you analyze literature, there's something called the Kuleshov effect that kind of developed in film editing in the Soviet Union in the 1910s and 1920s, and it's I'm reading Wikipedia here.
Whoa.
It is a mental phenomenon by which viewers derive more meaning from the interaction of two sequential shots than from a single shot in isolation. And so what this is like, this guy Kuleshov made this movie that is an expressionless man, and then he's like, it would just be like this expressionless man looking off of the camera, and then he'd cut to like a turkey, like a roasted turkey, and then everyone would look at that and be like, oh, he's hungry.
Yeah, I see. Right?
Are you sure it wasn't a wild goose or a goose prepared with a wild rice dressing?
Yeah.
You know, do you have any cayenne pepper in the kitchen?
Yeah. Or you know, there's like a dead body, and it's, oh, he's sad. He knows that person.
Oh, he's dead.
So I only make that point just to say, you know, hey, maybe, I mean, you know, it's a visual medium here, so we can.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Yeah. I think obviously that's a huge piece of editing and the shots, and the way that one of the most beautiful things about The Office is the way that the characters, especially Jim and Pam, communicate non-verbally. Right?
Yeah, 100%.
I certainly don't mean to say that they aren't that the show doesn't communicate in that way.
Yeah,
but just that like we have to. It's something interesting to think about as we analyze the show. Okay.
Which to me,
I think they live together.
Yeah,
I think to wrap it up, like that's what makes The Office so great, is it gives us this canvas where we can paint our own sort of emotions and feelings onto it. Mm-hmm. When I look at like the downloads for our show, there's a weird spike around fan theories. People really, like, if people are looking at our list of shows, I think people listen to that one a lot if they're picking out of a lineup, because people like to hear, like, what's your theory on what's going on with this character?
And, I mean,
you know, that's why we watch it.
We touch on it every once in a
while. I'm here to shut all that down.
Yeah. And we touch on it every once in a while. We're definitely here to, like, relive these episodes and relive these jokes, but, like, we're also kind of trying to get at that thing, too, that keeps us, like, coming
why
back.
Do people like, love The Office? Below why do we love The Office?
What is it below the surface of the sitcom that like we're all so drawn to? So, I don't mind diving into those theories every once in a while. But it's just something to think about moving forward. I think it's time for some trivia.
Let's just do our thing, collect our hardware, and get the hell home.
All right, gentlemen, let's cleanse our palates with some trivia. Unfortunately, I made a mega trivia.
Uh-oh.
It's a big one, just because I thought how much you're going to just completely crush by the time we actually get to trivia. So a lot of this is hard. We're going to roll through this. I'll do through some that you've already answered, but let's just truck through this. This is all trivia from the Florida arc. Everything that happens is from these episodes. At the top, here we go. Irene's grandson is a wonderful what?
Swimmer.
Swimmer, shallow and deep, and he can do it all.
He does it all.
Packer thinks Jim looks like what childhood toy?
Woolly Willy.
A Woolly Willy.
Which and is then, the Operation game character.
And then Dwight's like, you look like the guy from Operation. He's like, that's the same guy. that's what he says. That's my joke. That's the same guy.
Just I one think of it the actually, few times you feel for Todd Packer.
Yeah, I know. It is the same toy company.
Stole
same
his joke.
Yeah. How long has Packer been at Dunder Mifflin? He mentions.
20 years. I'm 20 an institution.
Years. An institution. Too strong. What TV character does Saber get to promote the pyramid?
Chuck.
Chuck. Okay. Very good. Chuck loves his pyramid. Make that cardboard cutout.
Yep.
That's a great keepsake. Somewhere a PA took home that cardboard cutout. All right. What is the tagline for the pyramid? It's not from Ryan's speech. It's not Saber's tagline, which is
embrace the power of the
come
pyramid.
Home. It's past. No, we see future. Signage for it in the store.
It is a shape that
I don't know. What is it?
The yeah, eighth wonder of the world in your hands.
Oh my God! Great.
The phone version of the pyramid is called what?
Arrowhead.
Yes, the Arrowhead. This is from the drop at the beginning of the show. What town is Nelly from in England?
Oh.
Oh, man. Something Shire.
What is it?
Liverpool? Basildon.
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 I was going to replay the drop, but it was going to take too long. Basildon. And it was bloody horrendous, isn't it? Before working at Saber, Nelly had a destructive what?
Shopping spree.
Yes, 13 pianos. What's Scranton's zip code?
Oh.
7... something.
No, it starts the one, right? Mm-hmm.
There's the regular zip code, and then
there's the plus.
Daryl says that's too vague.
Yeah,
you gotta get the last four digits.
I don't
18505-7427.
Yeah,
that's the full one. All right, this is a fun one.
Season 4, episode 1.
Thank you. Well, who is the nemesis in Toby's latest Chad Flenderson novel?
Oh, jeez.
This is. Deep, deep, deep office trivia.
I don't know. Who is it?
Dr. Lucifer Wu.
Wow.
Whoa.
Does he say that on screen?
He does.
Wow, crazy.
Dr. Lucifer Wu. In lieu of a rape whistle, Angela carries what?
An air horn?
No,
a
she doesn't.
A train whistle.
An
air horn.
No, it's an instrument.
That's
what I said.
She
carries.
An
she
accordion.
Says a rape what?
Flute.
Yes, a rape flute.
Oh, wow.
Which is insane.
A rape ocarina.
What are the names of Ryan's aunt and uncle?
Uncle.
You hear him on the phone.
Yep. So there's an L?
Yes.
Larry.
Yes. No.
Leonard.
Also the name of one of Michael's family members.
Luke.
Yes, Uncle Lucas and Aunt Carol.
I have an aunt.
Again, this is... tuck these away, listeners. If someone's like, oh, I know The Office, and you give them trivia questions, just ask them some of these.
Ask them what Ryan's uncle's name is.
Yeah, ask them what the latest villain in Toby's novel is called, Dr. Lucifer Woos. If they get that, continue the
Toby, no one cares about your sex crave black detective.
What's the name of Oscar's dog?
Gerald?
Yes, correct.
Wow.
True or false? Nelly successfully uses hypnotism to stop smoking.
No, she tried it, but it made her smoke more.
Yes, she ended up smoking more. What is Dwight's drinking game? He proposes.
Oh, it has to do with the buttons and the seeds.
I
what is
don't
the
know.
Name of it? Oh, no.
He doesn't say the name of it.
Oh, okay. It's all right. Everyone check your pockets.
Yes.
Whoever has the most buttons is the king.
No, whoever has the most seeds is the king.
And whoever has the least buttons is the fool or the jester.
Is the hunchback.
The hunchback.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
How many seeds do you have? 40 at all times. He takes up a little bag of buttons. How many buttons do you have on you? We already said who's sitting at Dwight's desk. It's Kelly. Mm-hmm. What two things do bed bugs thrive on?
Heat.
Yes.
And carbon dioxide.
Correct. Kathy orders room service that Dwight and Jim end up eating. What is their order?
Bananas Foster and
Devil's Food.
Death by Chocolate.
Death by Chocolate.
Dang. It's the second best Bananas Foster Dwight's ever had.
I'm a fraud.
No, Edwin's just Superman.
Yeah, I know.
We're all frauds next to Superman.
No.
What number interferes with Dwight's attempt to mind read Nelly?
741.
No.
No.
7-1-1-9 is the first time, but 7-1-1, which then is actually what Nelly was trying to communicate.
Seven minutes, one-on-one time.
In order, Dwight's ancestors did what occupations, according to the legend?
Oh, and then it was like reincarnated into me or something like that.
It's farmers. Uh-huh. Before that, they were hunters. Uh-huh. Before that, time travelers.
And then me
before
again.
That, me again.
Yeah.
At least that's how the legend goes. Yes. What are Anderson's three pillars of retail?
Oh, ingredients.
No, the actual
burgers,
ones.
And killing royalty. Service, convenience, and building loyalty.
Correct. Nice. And you also answer this. Why does Andy serve many pizzas at reception?
Oh, because Oscar's mouth is in canker country.
All right, last question. The office gang is trying to figure out what is in Dwight's treasure chest. Mm-hmm. They brainstorm ideas on a whiteboard, and they come up with seven ideas.
Oh, no.
This is a freeze frame question. It's also just funny to listen to.
How about beets?
No.
Gold.
Yes, actual gold is one of them. A trap.
True.
Star Wars stuff, nude mags. By the way, you can. I looked at who was sitting there at this meeting, and you can address a guest to every single. You can pick out the person.
Yeah. Kevin, nude mags.
Nude mags. A rosebud type scenario. Oscar.
Yes.
Shroot bones. Maybe Kelly, or this is also Kevin. A photo with our toothbrushes up his butt. Creed opens it, and that's the picture inside. A photo
Kevin,
with toothbrushes up our butt.
I've got
Kevin does use the up the butt phrase. Not as much as spicy foods up her butt.
Not
can
as
I
much
give
as Stanley.
You two more trivia questions?
Please
do. Yeah,
on Dwight's easel, he has written down Florida facts.
No! God, please, no!
So long.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 things Dwight has written up there. Do you want to guess? Or should I just tell
just
you?
Tell me. Yeah, I don't know.
Scarfaces, heat strokes, theme parks, Brooke Hogan, morbidly obese people, sinkholes, geriatric capital of the world. And my last trivia question would be, what does Jim say the antidote is for Dwight's poison?
True love's kiss.
There you go.
Hey, everybody. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Thanks
for
staying this long. Yeah, this is a friggin'.
I don't know how we did it, but we did. Let's just keep on talking about it. Please let us know about what you think about the Florida arc.
Would
give
you
us
like
a
to get
phone
a cocktail?
Call.
Maybe go out for a little dance. Beautiful day now.
Give us a call, 503-694-9314. You can leave us a message, and we like to play them on the air. You can email us, mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. We're on Facebook and Instagram, Michael Scott Podcast Company. We're on Twitter, @MichaelScottPod. We have a website, michaelscottpod.com. Special thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who runs our social media and designs all our artwork. And this episode was recorded in the OG studio at the Ward Brother Residence in Portland, Oregon.
Please remember to rate and review the show. It helps us, helps people find the show. And as always, thank you for every message, like, interaction that you send to us. We love hearing from you guys. We love you all, and we appreciate all of you.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for listening. Yeah. See you next week.
Pippity poppy, give me the salad.
Yes, sir.
With the pyramid, you have the connection to everything, in time and space.
Oh. Ah. Saber, it's time to come home.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.